This is from Luke's Gospel, chapter 10. And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You've answered right. Do this, and you will live." But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers." And you know the rest of the story. Jesus answers the question with the parable of the Good Samaritan. Interestingly enough, the Good Samaritan parable only shows up in Luke's Gospel. We have four versions of Jesus' life. They're all different in substantive and significant ways. Matthew and Mark are largely stories of Jesus' life written to newly converted Jews. And that sense of Jewish identity is very important. And Paul talks a lot in his writings to these churches about the relationship between Jewish history and ministry to Gentiles. Well, Luke's Gospel is the only one that has a story about literal ministry to outcasts, Samaritans. And the irony of the story is that the religious elite figures in the story don't do very well. But the Samaritan is the one that steps up and does what is needed at the time for the man who fell among thieves. The message in Luke's Gospel takes the essence of the Gospel and makes it more universal. And that story only occurs in Luke's version of Jesus' life. I think the setup to the story is as interesting as the message in the parable. The lawyer trying to find out, you know, okay, what is it that we need to do and how do we need to do it to get it right? Who is my neighbor? Is the question that sets up these thoughts this morning. Kind of reminds me of Peter's question. How many times do I have to forgive, huh? And Jesus, presumably coming up with the largest number he can think of at the moment, says 70 times 7. And Peter goes, "Oh, that much. Darn. Who is my neighbor?" Well, which one proved neighbor to the man who fell among thieves? The Samaritan. "Oh, darn." Vision of neighborliness and forgiveness that go beyond what we would like or even expect. Kind of jars us a little bit. I want to talk about neighbor and neighborliness today in light of how the Spirit strengthens our lives and our ministry. I want to try to address the question, who is our neighbor? We'll start with something easy. Our neighbors are the people with whom we share interests. And by that I don't mean allegiance to a sports team or needlepoint or softball or some other hobby. Who share our interests in that what edifies our lives and what we gain from or stand to lose from our transactions, if you will. We were in Oregon a month ago, and I kind of felt like I was cheating on our people when we toured the Tillamook Cheese Factory in Northwest Oregon, because, of course, they make cheese in Wisconsin, and I've always been told it's a whole lot better. Honestly, we ate the stuff. It was terrific. The way they make cheese and the infrastructure that supports the cheese industry in Oregon, we learned, is much different than the way the cheese industry infrastructure takes place in Wisconsin. In Northwest Oregon, cheese farmers are relatively small, a couple hundred head in a fairly small portion of land, and they all belong to a much larger cooperative, and everyone's interests are shared. You know, when the whole does well, every individual does well. And it's a much more cooperative kind of commercial enterprise than you find most other places in terms of agricultural work and so on. So we have Northwest Oregon's cooperative, and people who share interests are quite literally and very profoundly neighbors one unto another. Well, I started thinking about that. That mindset doesn't work in Germanic northern Wisconsin. The cheesemakers compete, and they protect their holdings and their secret recipes and all of that sort of thing. Wisconsin cheese is wonderful. Frankly, so is Oregon cheese. But there's a neighborliness even among the competitors in that, competition maintains quality. There's a level of quality control that if you were to lapse, your competitor will outsell you. So, interestingly enough, people whose interests oppose us, at least in this metaphorical example, you know, I want to do better with my little dairy enterprise than the other guy. Well, if I do well, he does well, but vice versa, because we will sort of maintain a level of quality control that benefits all of us. Who is our neighbor? People who share our interests. People with whom our interests compete as well, when you turn the logic of it inside out. And I know this verse is in second parentheses, blessed are the cheesemakers. Who is our neighbor? The people with whom our interests converge, the people with whom our interests compete, the people with whom our values converge. Presbyterians. Our brand of Christianity is shared among us. We share it in a large extent as we overlap with the disciples down the block. Our values converge, we form congregations, and we do ministry. That occurs in civic groups, nonprofits, sports teams, all manners of places where we are in the company of people who more or less believe the same things we believe, creates a kind of neighborly environment. That's a no-brainer. You and I, your pastor, and you as a congregation share most congruently theological beliefs and ministry understandings and so on. We're alike in those values. Politically? Probably not so much alike. Not sure. We're going to go through Little Rock, and I will be the only one in the room that would at least consider going in and stopping at the Clinton Library. Probably not going to do it. We don't have time. I know the rest of you would pass by on the other side. But interestingly enough, and this is hard for me, I am ideologically opposed to a great deal of what becomes Christian fundamentalism. I think that there is a divisiveness there that is subverting the message of the gospel, and that's just my opinion. And I've also done some research that says it actually can lead to violence. The energy and initiative to do that research was not especially noble on my part. But I will tell you this, that early in my ministry, I was doing some work with the Illinois prison system and visited a lot of folks who were in prison. And most of them that I visited were in there because they were homicide offenders. They were murderers. These were the worst of the worst. And I remember one guy in particular who I was having a conversation with, and he had converted to Christianity and had done so in a big way and was very conservative and fundamentalist in his outlook. And we disagreed on a lot of things. But I asked him, I said, okay, well, how does that play out in here? He said, well, it's interesting. I was out in the yard the other day and was talking to a couple of guys who I knew hate each other. And I tried to bring the word of Jesus to them. And I think I stopped a fight. Now, in a prison yard full of people who are only there because they're capable of killing, stopping a fight using fundamentalist Christianity probably saved a life. I'm on with that. So neighbors are people with whom we ideologically agree, but it's also possible to find neighborliness even with people who with whom you are ideologically opposed. And it's a useful lesson for me to hold on to when, okay, that particular congregation wouldn't be one that I would enjoy or get much out of worship, nor would they let me lead it, frankly. On the other hand, it's working. And in its own way, maybe saving lives. Who is my neighbor? The people with whom our values converge, but also perhaps the people with whom our values oppose. Neighbor. It by and large boils down to this. We are neighbors with people who share and compete with our interests, who share and compete with our values, because probably they have something we need and we have something they need. There's a measure of sharing that goes with our common life together. A trivial example. Got an email early this week from our department chair who said, I'm going to be on I'm going to be out of the office and at a conference for most of the week. And if you need anything that a chair needs to sign, call our associate chair. And, you know, we all know who that is. This is a guy who spends a lot of his own research on other continents. And when he and I are on different continents, I'm a happy guy. So what happens? He's in the office this week. I need a signature on a travel voucher. It is stupid. It takes a second, but I got to go deal with it. I got to go. Can you please? Well, it occurred to me that not terribly long ago, just a few months ago, as a matter of fact, he was putting together a new course that he wants into the curriculum in the College of Arts and Sciences. I happen to sit on the committee that adjudicates these processes. So he comes to the committee, makes his pitch. He needs my vote. I need his signature. That's how it works. Who is my neighbor? I guess this guy. Understand the metaphor here. But all of us need from others, and all of us have things that others need from us. We're leaving on a road trip in just a few minutes, essentially. And we will ride on Texas highways. And there are a lot of people who work for the state of Texas, just like me, governor signs their paycheck, that are building and maintaining and patrolling and in some way facilitating the infrastructure of Texas highways. And there's a million other ways that we never think about that our day-to-day life depends on what other people can do. And of course, it highlights the value of what all of us do, because we all contribute in whatever way that God gives us the wit and the will and the spirit that energizes it to do our part. Everybody in here needs from other people. Everybody in here meets the needs of other people in our own individual and specific ways. So I guess the answer to the question, who is my neighbor, is rhetorical. Who isn't? Well, in practical terms, let me leave you with this thought. There is nobody in here. Imagine sometime today or in the next week or so, you run into that person in your life who, when they're on another continent, you're a happy person, right? You run into them. And they're in deep trouble. They've been badly hurt. They've been victimized in some way. Would you not do everything in your power to be helpful? Even with, you know, the other continent kind of person. I would suggest that in the spirit of neighborliness, you take just a portion of that sentiment and view them that way anyway, even when they're not in deep trouble. This doesn't mean you have to spend enormous amounts of time or expend great deals of energy in charitable interaction and so on, but simply elevate your view of them from even enemy, if you will, to neighbor. And let the Spirit of God that generates our church and our life, the major festival of Pentecost and the energy that you can derive from it, help you see and understand neighbor today. Amen.